Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. If this, though, is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. Hyper-targeting has come in for a tough time in recent months, with some challenges to whether or not it really pays off. One advocate of hyper-targeting, though, is interim CMO Nick Eads. And Nick joins us now. Nick, welcome to our podcast.
Dave, great to be here.
Good to see you. So let's dive straight in. When we talk about hyper-targeting, remind us, what do we mean?
Yeah, this is important because I think it's getting bandied around. And, you know, when buzzwords become too loosely bandied around, we do get into the realms of hyperbole. So step back. Hyper-targeting started in B2C, right? So we have to remember that. And you may not remember the name of the company that called it, Dave. I had to dig this out myself. Do you remember a thing called MySpace? Yes.
Well, obviously, I'm too young.
I was going to say, clearly well before your time and mine. But in the darkest annals of space and time, in fact, Wikipedia to its friends, you can discover this. MySpace coined the term in 2007. They launched something called Self-Serve. It was later called My Ads.
Right.
Branding, eh? So what this did was enable online marketers to tap into self-expressed user information to target campaigns like never before. Classic hardcore B2C there. Was it a little before social media? Yeah, but has it become part of social media and everything that goes completely. I mean, this is digital on steroids. The ability to work out where people are when they open your email, respond to an e-beacon or step into a store, location definition, all this ability, all this data is there. So, yeah, of course you can hyper-target. You can hyper-target people at home, as they leave home in their cars, and so on. But look, it's moved on a space or two. I think the risk is that when people talk about hyper-targeting in B2C, they are, you know, again, come back to MySpace, right? So they had a thing called hyper-target, which allowed people to target their ads to 10 different categories of self-identified users, including more music, sports, movies, right? In B2B, do we want to know what movies they watch? What sports they do? I don't think so. So I think we've got to start there. That is what hyper-targeting means. I don't think we need to know what people in our decision-making unit eat for breakfast, car they drive, where they go on holiday. But, I'm going to say one other thing before we go any further. And you know what? We should say AI at least once today, Dave. It's Friday after all. You haven't said it this week now.
I believe this podcast has got a whole 6 minutes without saying the word.
Well, AI is here. It's here. It's in hyper-targeting. Lots of marketing teams, companies now using, you know, generative AI, machine learning and all kinds of other tools in that space to, you know, organically target, segment, personalize lead score, use predictive analytics, and even develop content that is hyper-targeted. So, my goodness, it's really fizzing away.
Okay. And I've introduced you as an advocate of hyper-targeting. So tell us what results it can deliver in the B2B space.
I think the results are spectacular, but I think the thing that, that you've got to do with hyper-targeting in B2B is add context. So before you do that, take a little step back. If you've got a target set of customers, prospects even, and two of those companies do 100 million revenue a year, and you haven't identified that one is unprofitable in serious trouble, and the other one is growing and profitable in an M&A mode, then your hyper-targeting will be wrong. So every time it works, it's because the companies that have done the due diligence on that target segment, on that space, have used a shed load of data. So, you know, it's your question. It's like examples of businesses that do hyper-targeting well. I can tell you that when I was at Dell 4 or 5 years, the sheer volume of data we use to profile target accounts included every single aspect of their financials, their growth trajectory, their profitability, their relative performance versus peer companies by sector, by size, because we deliberately picked the customers that we wanted and left the rest.
Right.
Right. We wanted long-term relationships with profitable growing companies that had influence in the sector. And that was 20 years ago. So let's just move to the present because we don't understand that. I'm a fairly regular judge of the B2B Marketing Awards, but you can go to the B2B Marketing Awards website and look at who won the B2B Marketing Award for ABM last year. And ABM is where you have to hyper-target. One-to-one, one-to-few. I'm not a fan of one-to-many. One-to-one, one-to-few. Great example was the Hitachi Vantara project that won the award last year by the incredible agency that is Together, right? Fantastic creative on a by account basis, deeply personalized by account, all contextual. They drove deep insight into every single decision maker, issue driven by persona, by company, 10 accounts, not 10,000, not 1,000, not 100, 10 accounts, hyper-targeted. Huge results, over 60 million of pipeline, greater than 101 ROI, loads of leads. No surprise that not only did it win best ABM campaign, but also best use of insight and the most commercially successful campaign.
Yeah.
It's out there. It's case to go speak to Hitachi, go speak to Together. I'm sure they'd love to talk to you, unless you're a competitor of theirs. They'll talk you through it. Another couple of examples. So thinking about this, Digital Radish, fabulous agency, love them for bits for 19, hats off. Did an incredible campaign with Exasol, also ABM, also mega hyper-targeted, won 2 golds and a silver B2B Marketing Awards the previous year. So the evidence is there. When you judge this, when you see what comes through, you're involved in choosing the top three and whatever, you see the quality of work that not only wins awards, but is commercially successful, is driven by a level of, you want to use the phrase hyper-targeting is relentless, detailed, sales aligned, because you're feeding off the salespeople. They also know stuff. Don't discount them. There are sources all over the place. I mean, we've got Dun & Bradstreet, LinkedIn SalesNow, Bombora, ZoomInfo, Sixth Sense, Lead Genius, Discoverall, Dream Data, Lead Space, and people forget, Companies House. Go to Companies House, profile your company. Company's data is there. Company's House data is there. Why isn't that foundational to your hyper-targeting? So, you know, there's tremendous power in the data. And you know, if you want to win awards and frankly grow your business, that's what you do.
So for those people who've been tempted by, I think your passion really for the subject really kind of comes across, Nick. And maybe they've also tested and looked at some of the case studies you mentioned. But for those people who are kind of intrigued and want to try out hyper-targeting in their space, how should they start? How is it best to go about it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you fundamentally need to start small.
Right.
There is no sort of, there is no, with respect, no try out without a lot of preparation, right? So you'll say, we're going to do this and we're going to do this really well. And we're gonna explore everything. So all those sources that I mentioned need to be on the table in some way, shape, or form. Lots of these companies like Dream Data and so on will give you the opportunity to run at it without paying the full license sometimes. So you have to build in a part of your target market which is low risk. So let's just pick a small group of accounts, again, maybe 10, a bit like Together and Hitachi. Those accounts are low risk. So if anything goes wrong, you haven't infected your drinking water. So to be polite about it. And the key is to build it ground up. Start with Dun & Bradstreet data. Start with Companies House, overlay it. Look at that data so that actually it shows you whether these accounts are growing, whether they're profitable, whether they're influential, and then rank them before you augment that with anything else. So you know the ones that you want and the ones that you don't want. And do this with sales because you've got to make sure that the salespeople do care about winning these deals. If it's not in their target list for the year, no matter what you do, you won't get their attention because they're not paid on it. And if you can agree with your sales leader that you're going to try to do a much better job for them by winning more and more often in a very predictable, scalable way, then that has to be a joint project. So you start with this solid object of data, and you might go through that town and go, just like, two of these are absolutely rubbish. I'll go and get another two because you want to be able to work. But you've learned something by chucking those two away. It's like, I didn't realize. You know what I mean? Before I'd have just put them in the campaign and run with it. But they're two absolute duds in there. Take them out, start again.
Yeah.
And then it's the usual test and learn, go again. And it's got to be safe. So you, sales, anybody else involved in the team, I've got to feel we're able to experiment until we can create something which is valuable, predictable, and drives new business wins. Start small. Loads of data, everything you can get, profile like crazy, make decisions, test and learn, safe environment for sales. Do you know what? At the end of two or three cycles around like that, I think you'd be in a much better place.
Really good advice. Thank you. So I started the conversation by saying that there'd been some criticism of hyper-targeting in recent months. So are there any areas, because you've been a strong, over the last sort of 20 minutes, you've been a strong advocate of hyper-targeting. Are there any areas where maybe it wouldn't work as an approach for business marketers?
Yeah, Dave, it's a little bit disappointing that there is criticism of this. And I think it comes occasionally from areas that where there is a misunderstanding about the value that high quality, well delivered ABM exists. And I come back to what I said earlier, one to one and one to few. And I do mean a few, which is really less than 100, right? So you can say one to one, one to less than 100. I think that's where its sweet spot is. Absolutely forensic level of engagement. One to many ABM, I'm not a fan of, and any sense of spray and pray and B2B to me is always a bad thing. And that's where hyper targeting is a complete waste of time, money, and effort because you are spraying and praying. And when you spray and pray, you're probably not working with sales, you're probably not working in the context of the revenue goals this year. It's too unreliable. Yeah. So I think if there's criticism of hyper-targeting, it's because people are getting caught up in one-to-many, an old-school spray and pray. I don't think you find any criticism where ABM, one-to-one, one-to-few, one-to-less than 100, is done really well because you cannot do it any other way.
So it's not that there are sectors where it might not work, target audiences where it might not work, any of those sorts of things?
It's a very fair question because I think the smaller the enterprise that you're targeting, the harder it is to get good, predictable, good data and then predictable behavior. I think that's where I'm going with that. Larger companies are stable in the main, well-organized, you know, and in the sense of predictable, they buy what they've always bought, and they'll replace something they have with something that's very similar to it, and so on. So smaller companies, there's thousands of them, you know, the largest population of in any sort of developed countries is the SME space and slightly below. That is hard. It's a hard market to gain traction in. And the risk is you do spray and pray in a desperate quest to get any revenue quickly. And I think you can be much more generalized in that space. You know, if you're going after butchers in the home counties, it's really quite simple. They're very unsophisticated. They do what butchers do. If you're after reinsurance companies in the G7 countries, again, that can be super small, but means you have to be forensic in your engagement, because they are big, stable, complex organizations. And that's where hyper-targeting makes a lot of sense.
Thank you. Nick, if people have enjoyed listening to you today and want to reach out and talk more on the topic, how can they reach you?
LinkedIn is my favorite way of doing things. So thoughts of the country sometime.
So a hyper-targeted message via LinkedIn is the way.
Yeah, show me you can do it.
Great stuff. Nick Eads, thanks very much.
Pleasure, Dave.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guest, Nick Eads. And thanks to our technical person, Alicia Gration. Thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from, just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk.